Chapter 26. The park had never held so many people at once before. They must have come from every village and town within a few days' distance, at the very least. Xingxing had worried about how to keep herself from being seen by Wei Ping and stepmother. Instead, it was easy to get lost in the crowd. Buddhist monks in brown cassocks walked in weaving lines, beating drums with their palms, fingers, fists, elbows, wrists, knees, even toes. Jewel-bedecked women stood or sat in clusters, their silk dresses heavily embroidered in so many hues. They looked like a fragrance garden. Bands of gold paper with painting on them peeked out from their sleeves. Most of them were thin, and those who weren't did their best to appear fragile, nonetheless, to the men who wandered around in double-breasted jackets and hats with sashes. A few of those men had long thumbnails, a sign of being part of the leisure class, and most of them were corpulent. They watched Xingxing walk by, and they instantly perked up. They called out about how pretty she was, dressed in green, a cool, watery dream, feathers fluffing around her neck and shoulders, like a spirit about to take flight. They spoke silly words to call her to them. Silly, but never clever, never funny. They were dunces. Xingxing wouldn't look at those men. She hadn't come to advertise herself for marriage. A girl alone couldn't do that. Young people who married without it being arranged by their parents could even be put to death. In the long week that had just passed, Xingxing had talked with the spirits of her mother and her father. She had decided that she would marry and leave stepmother's home. She was healthy and useful. Some man would surely want her. But she hadn't yet figured out how to do it without stepmother's help in the arrangements, for she never wanted stepmother's help in anything again. A plan would come to her when she was ready. The spirits would help her. Today, she was here only to see the spectacles. And what spectacles they were! She passed a snake charmer and magicians and fortune tellers. She watched an erotic play by a group of transvestites. She stared at contortionists and acrobats. In a roped-off corner, young men played kickball. Nearby, others did archery. There were jugglers and people leaping through hoops and balancing on poles. And everywhere she turned, troops of musicians kept the air singing with flutes and whistles and bells. Large oblong tables were set up here and there, decorated with fine cloisonné vases of fresh flowers. Small round trays and carved lacquerware overflowed with precisely arranged foods. Xingxing used a rice paddle to fill a small bowl with white rice from the huge pot on a table and covered her rice with whatever foods she wanted, just as everyone else was doing. Roast chicken and duck, of course, but also cold strips of sheep tail, which stepmother called Mongol food, but which Xingxing now sampled for the first time. She was delighted to find it delicately tasty. She ate fatty pork and onions and garlic, minced and wrapped in lettuce leaves. With her fingers, she dipped fresh steamed crab into vinegar and ginger. She nibbled on shrimp and venison and rabbit. A young man who had watched her eating with her fingers offered a set of chopsticks, those sticks for eating that had become so popular. He looked at her suggestively. Instead of blushing, she accepted the chopsticks boldly and walked on, using them to eat noodle and vegetable dishes. She sipped fine wines and munched on lychee, kumquat, loquat, tangerines. She sucked away the sweet fish of a lonigan, then rolled the big black seed from the middle around and around on her palm. When men followed her, she paid them no attention, and eventually they gave up and went away, muttering in frustration. Xingxing had seen imported foods before. Master Tang and Mei Zai had them on their tables at special occasions. and she'd seen some foreign treats at the market earlier in the summer when she was with Yeo Wang. But now, she tasted them herself. She put her finger into almost every dish. She ate spinach, cucumber, eggplant spiced with jasmine and cardamom, and star anise. She smiled at the bite of black pepper, chili, lemon, coriander, fenugreek, Mediterranean olives. She loved the nuts, almonds, walnuts, pistachios. She reveled in the fruits, figs, bananas, pomegranates, star fruits, coconuts, pomelillos. Hanging in cages at many of the tables were exotic birds. Beside the fruit was a cockatoo with a red beak and green plumage. It must have flown in a jungle far from here. It screamed as people chose their fruit. Never had Xingxing wondered much about the world beyond the 13 provinces of Ming China. But now, she wanted to know if women ever traveled far and wide, if Chinese women ever saw cockatoos flying free. And food, a thing that Xingxing had hardly paid attention to before, she now found to be a powerful lure. She imagined herself going straight north, to the Great Wall on the border of her own Shaanxi province, crossing that wall and heading out into whatever might be beyond, or going down to the village and getting on a riverboat again, going downriver, down, down to the Han River, and then the wild yellow waters of the Yangtze River, where the winds blew all the time, all the way south, out to the coast, then boarding a ship to the South China Sea, looking and tasting and smelling and hearing and feeling all that the world had to offer. The day went too quickly. As the sun waned, men lit lanterns and sat around square tables listening to stories. The storytellers got the attention of the audience by opening and closing fans very quickly and smacking them hard on the side of the table. Some of them beat drums. Some strummed lutes. They worked in pairs, using big clappers made of 2 plates of wood and little clappers made of 5 pieces of wood. The big clappers began and ended the story, and sometimes were used within the story for dramatic effect, while the little clappers kept up a steady background beat throughout the narration. Every story began with the same claim. If you hear the first part, you'll want to hear the second. If you hear the story today, you'll come back tomorrow for another. If you hear the story tonight, you'll think about it as you sleep. Smack went the fan, and the storyteller whipped out a long red scarf and twirled around once. Xingxing stood at a distance and watched. A pair of storytellers caught her attention and held it. In their story, one played a teacher and the other played a student. The teacher was trying to get the student to use better language, the imperial language, focusing on mistakes in the use of pronouns. The actors were doing short comedies, saying Shang. "Say, I'm your teacher," said the teacher. Clack, clack, clack went the little clappers. "I'm your teacher," said the student. Clack, clack, clack went the little clappers. "No, no." The teacher shook his hands in the air and jumped up and down. "You're not the teacher. Say it." Clack, clack, clack went the little clappers. "You're not the teacher." And on it went, with the audience laughing and laughing. And Xingxing laughed too. When a story was surprising, the men pounded the table with both hands, and Xingxing pressed her hands together. After a while, Xingxing wandered over to other tables where men sat settling accounts. She watched as a woman stood behind a man and listened to him negotiate. It took only a few moments to figure out what was going on. The woman was one of his wives, and he sold her. Just like that. She screamed, she pleaded, she threw herself at her husband's feet. But in the end, she had to go stand behind her new husband. Would they have a ceremony with her face covered by a red cloth? Or was that it? An exchange of person for coins? How many years had she lived with him? did she feel tenderly toward him? Did they have children? Were the children all girls? Xingxing's cheeks felt heavy. Her eyes closed against the hot wave of questions, as though she would cry. She pressed her fingers to her nostrils to stop her nose from running in this madness. A man walked through the crowd loudly, announcing the sea competition. People gathered to sing their poems aloud. Another man promised to read a story he was writing that would take pages and pages. It was a new literary form called a novel. Normally, Xingxing would have wanted to listen to both, but now, suddenly, she longed to go home. She wanted to get away from men who sold wives and men who bought them. She opened her eyes and turned, and there was Wei Ping, looking right at her. Stepmother was watching her, too. Xingxing's heart raced. She ran past them, toward the edge of the park. But somehow, she wound up in a stand of Turiya trees. She couldn't remember Turiya trees being in this park before, and she'd been here so many times. Branches turned to the claws that grabbed and swiped at her. She fell over the roots of a dead tree. When a Turiya tree decays, it becomes a nest for a python. She imagined a snake closing around her middle, squeezing, squeezing. She let out a little shriek and scrambled to her feet and ran, but at random, for she didn't know which way home was. She was lost. That was impossible. An evil spirit must have put a spell on her. She panicked and changed directions and ran faster. A shoe came off. Alas, one of Mother's gold shoes. She stopped to go back for it, but as she turned, she saw a man pick it up. And coming through the trees behind the man, she saw Stepmother hobbling as fast as she could. Perfect shoe. Mother's shoe. Most dreadful loss. Xingxing ran on, stupefied with grief. She ran all the way home. She went straight into the storeroom and collapsed in a heap of sobs. When she could finally breathe smoothly enough to talk, she whispered, "I'm sorry." She undressed and folded Mother's lovely things away into the hole. "I'm sorry about the shoe," she crooned, holding herself in her own arms. "I'm sorry, Mother. I'm sorry. I'm sorry." She crawled out and sat in the main cavern room, looking out the overhead window as the very last memories of sunlight faded and stars appeared. She waited for the inevitable screaming of Stepmother and the inevitable cut of the switch, the inevitable banishing from this cave. But Stepmother and Wei Ping didn't come and didn't come. Xingxing was too anxious to just stay put. In her old dress, she went outside to the jujube trees. The branches should have hung low with the weight of ripe fruit by now, but all the fruit had been picked long ago and given to Yeo Wang. The trees looked empty and sad, as though they sensed their unjust loss. And now Xingxing remembered the Turiya trees in the park. They'd always been there. She knew that now. Of course. Her fear of stepmother had disoriented her. Trees were not the enemy. Fear was. Fear had made her lose mother's gift to her. Oh, precious gift. The golden shoe. Xingxing wrapped her arms around the trunk of a bare jujube tree. Not a single date. Its thorns stuck out sharply, fending off intruders, protecting fruit that wasn't there. Poor tree. She fell asleep on the ground, hugging the base of the tree. Chapter 27. "You wouldn't believe it," said Wei Ping to Xingxing. "There was a young woman at the cave festival who looked so much like you."
"Not that much," said Stepmother as she popped grapes into her mouth. She had filled her bodice with fruit at the festival, enough to last them a week. "I was only confused because she wore clothes that made me think of a cloak and dress that used to belong to Xingxing's mother. But those were buried with her, of course, along with all her other fine things. It was simple confusion. The woman at the festival hardly looked like Xingxing at all. She was quite a beauty."
Wei Ping leaned toward Xingxing.
Mother thought the girl looked like you so much that she expected to find you dressed in green silk when we got home and missing one shoe. The girl lost a gold shoe.
We drank wine, said stepmother, and it was late and already getting dark. We couldn't see well.
Wei Ping laughed. Mother was fuming mad, and then there you were, your old tattered self, sitting in the dirt under the trees, barefoot, like a waif.
She went on gaily talking about the festival and everything she'd seen there, and about the men who had told a go-between that they wanted to know more about her. And that was the end of that. No screaming, no whipping, no banishing.
Xingxing shouldn't have been surprised. After all, neither stepmother nor Wei Ping ever looked at her.
Not really. A change of clothes, and they didn't even recognize her. They settled back into a routine of waiting to hear from potential suitors. Each morning, stepmother said that a suitor was sure to come that day with an offer of marriage. And each night, she said the next day would bring that offer. By the end of a week, when none had come, her eyes glittered and her voice grew shrill.
Then one morning, one of the old women who assisted in marriage arrangements showed up at their door.
"The prince is coming," she said.
"The prince?"
Stepmother opened the door wide.
"Come inside and sit down at the kang beside my daughter," she said. "Would you like some tea?"
"Certainly. And what is that pungent sweetness in the air?"
"Figs," said stepmother. She put one of the remaining figs that she'd saved from the festival onto a tray and offered it to the old woman.
"Well, now, I must be having a problem with my ears. I could have sworn I heard you say, 'The prince.'"
"You did. He's coming to take a wife."
Stepmother's fingers played along her lips.
She was so excited. "What did you say your name was?"
"I'm Zhu Mai." That was a very good fig. Stepmother got Zhu Mai another fig.
"Tell us more, Zhu Mai."
"He's looking for a young woman who was at our own cave festival."
"Really? I was at the cave festival." Wei Ping smoothed her dress and sat up tall.
"I didn't think the prince attended."
"He didn't. He heard about this woman from someone who sold him a shoe. Apparently, the woman lost it as she was leaving the festival."
Xingxing stopped her sweeping. She stood the broom against the wall and listened.
Stepmother gave Xingxing a sharp glance. "Get on with your work, lazy one."
Xingxing took the broom into her hands again, but she didn't sweep.
"Is it a gold shoe?" whispered Wei Ping, asking the question that Xingxing was sure was on stepmother's mind as well, and that sat on the tip of her own tongue.
The woman cocked her head at Wei Ping like a curious bird.
"How did you guess?" "It couldn't have been you."
Wei Ping looked taken aback.
"And why not?"
"They say she's a rare beauty. The shoe's been sold from rich man to a richer man all week long, until it got so expensive only the prince could buy it. As the price went up, so did the reports of her beauty. Now she's touted to be the most beautiful woman in the empire."
"Nonsense," says stepmother.
"So you saw her then?" asked Zhu Mai.
"You admit that your daughter is not that woman?"
"Admit? Why would you use a word like that?" asked stepmother.
"The prince is going from village to village with the one gold shoe. He's letting every female who attended the cave festival, young and old, try it on. So far, it has fit no one. But he will continue looking until it does. And when he finds the one that shoe belongs to, he'll marry her. If you admit your daughter was not that woman, then there's no need for me to put her name on the list of girls to be interviewed."
"I admit nothing, Zhu Mai."
"I admit nothing, Zhu Mai," said stepmother. "I said nonsense because I was surprised that a single shoe could be sold as a thing of value. No other reason."
"Then I take it you want me to add Wei Ping's name to the list?
Indeed, said stepmother. She ran to her money box and came back quickly. She dropped a coin in Zumai's open palm. Then she added a second.
For your slave girl? Asked Zumai.
She's not a slave. She's my stepdaughter, and it's not for her.
Then who? Asked Zumai.
Me. Chapter 28.
How could you? Said Wei Ping. You're putting yourself in competition with your own daughter?
Don't be stupid, said stepmother. You'll try the shoe first. If it fits you, that will be the end of that. You will be the wife of the prince. But if it's too small, then it only makes sense for me to try it on. If it fits me, you'll be the daughter of the prince, which is almost as good.
But you were wearing your mourning sack to the festival. Anyone who knows you and saw you will remember that. No one would believe you were the girl with the gold shoes.
If the shoe fits me, everyone will believe it. People believe anything. Look how people believed you composed that C.
Wei Ping flushed and looked quickly at Xingxing, her eyes full of shame. Xingxing didn't care. A stolen poem was a small sham in comparison to everything else. You promised Father Spirit that you'd never marry again, she said.
Stepmother blanched. Her hands flew up, and she turned in a circle, staring hard into the air. Have mercy, ancestors, she said in a wheedling voice. I'd never marry an ordinary man, but this is different. No one would want me to give up such a chance. It's a prince, after all, a prince. I've heard that he lives across an arched stone bridge, marble, not the wooden bridges of the countryside, behind vermilion walls with statues of elephants outside the gates. His palace is measured in units of the ancient yan rather than the modern zhang because it's so big. He has legions of eunuchs who wait on him and run the household. When he visits his ancestral tombs, he goes by horseback with a 100-man entourage and returns by barge. It's a level of wealth we can hardly imagine. It would be the best life for Wei Ping.
She looked at Xingxing and blinked fast. It would be the best life for Xingxing, too, for all the Wu children.
I don't think Father ever cared much about riches, said Xingxing quietly. He loved simple things and basic virtues like loyalty. He expected of us only that we be loyal to him.
I am loyal, said stepmother. Loyal, loyal, loyal. The prince's private gardens, full of flowering plants of all kinds. Simple pleasures. The Wu ancestors could have a temple there, designated a shrine. Or no, it would be better than a shrine. It would be a shitang, big enough for the whole family.
It doesn't matter what you call it, said Xingxing. They'll know you've been disloyal.
How dare you talk to me like that? How dare you be so defiant?
They'll add it to your other offenses, said Xingxing.
Offenses? What offenses? Don't talk like that. Misfortunes follow from angry, vengeful ancestors. What I intended is not an offense. How could it be an offense when I do it for my daughter, for my husband's daughter, for my husband's daughters, both of them?
You can keep saying it. You can keep adding me as an afterthought, said Xingxing. But they'll know you aren't doing it for me, as will the spirit of my mother.
The spirit of your mother? What has she to do with any of this? She's not my ancestor.
But she's mine, said Xingxing sadly, whatever form she took, whatever form she takes next.
What do you mean, whatever form she took?
Stepmother's voice was thin, high, screech.
What form did she take?
You know as well as I do.
Stepmother's fists
pressed against her cheeks.
No!
What's going on? Asked Wei Ping, frantically pulling on her mother's hands. What are you two talking about?
Stepmother sank to her knees, dragging Wei Ping to the floor with her. It couldn't have been your mother. It was too big. Your mother was small, maddeningly small.
You can try to fool yourself, but you can't fool the spirits, and you can't fool me, said Xing Xing. Never again. You knew the moment Wei Ping told you I fed her with my shishi, the forefinger I used to feed myself. You knew then, deep in your heart, you knew. And you fooled me into going to the temple and leaving behind my old dress.
Feeding who? Wailed Wei Ping. The fish? Are you talking about the fish? What are you saying?
Tears streamed down her face.
I don't understand anything.
But you do understand, said Xing Xing. It's so sad, but we all understand.
Chapter 29. In the end, Wei Ping sided with her mother.
What else could a practical girl do?
Xing Xing hardly blamed her. Perhaps, if her own mother had done something terrible, she would have sided with her too. She couldn't know. She'd never been put to the test. Stepmother made a potion of centipede, wasps, venomous snake, ants, hair cuttings, menstrual blood, and spit, and sealed it in an urn that she hobbled off with into the woods. She did it all before the girl's eyes. She didn't even try to hide. Xing Xing didn't know what magic that concoction was supposed to effect, but it didn't matter. Mother was beyond stepmother's powers to harm her now, and Xing Xing was somehow unable to fear for herself. When stepmother returned with dirt under her fingernails, neither girl said a word. Xing Xing watched Wei Ping and stepmother primp themselves for the prince's visit to the village. Stepmother took off her mourning sackcloth and put on a brocade dress for the first time since father's death. The two of them painted each other's faces. They arranged each other's hair. Then Xumai came by and announced the most amazing news. The prince was paying private visits to each home. It was the only way to be sure that he tried the shoe on every single girl. Stepmother made Xing Xing clean the cave again. The oromanthus blooms were already open, so stepmother had Xing Xing scatter the fragrant yellow flowers across the threshold of the cave. The prince sent gifts ahead of him. By custom, imperial visits were always preceded by gifts. They were beautiful tortoiseshells that made Xing Xing think of the tortoiseshell that Yeo Wang used. Stepmother wouldn't let Xing Xing touch them. She got on her knees and quickly gathered up the oromanthus blooms and arranged them in these shells herself, muttering words Xing Xing couldn't make out. Finally, the prince's retinue came. The horsemen clad in brilliant colors led the way. Soldiers marched into their cave home and knelt on one knee, ready to rise quickly and obey the prince's every command. Stepmother and Wei Ping didn't know how to behave. They knelt in the most formal way, keeping their bodies erect. Their confusion showed in the stiffness of their shoulders and the way their eyes darted around. Xing Xing didn't kneel, though. She sat on her bottom in the shadows of the Kang, her legs tucked under her and her knees spread out in front like a winnowing fan. Children sat that way when they felt lazy. Xing Xing didn't feel lazy. She felt alert and almost angry. This whole thing was a sham, and she had had more than her fill of shams. The prince was supposed to choose a wife by using a shoe. But surely, many women's feet would fit the shoe. He had to know that. So, really, he was just looking for the woman who pleased him most. It seemed wickedly unkind for the man to make such a show when none of it mattered. She didn't really feel sorry for stepmother, and given how Wei Ping had turned against her, she didn't feel sorry for her half-sister either. But there were dozens of women waiting to try on the shoe, hundreds maybe. She felt sorry for them.
innocent women, stupidly waiting.
Xingxing had changed gradually in the weeks since her fish mother was killed. She was determined to be no one's fool anymore. She felt strong. A strong woman in a world that tried to deny the very existence of such a thing. But she wouldn't be denied. She felt she could leap into fire like the mystics and not burn up. If she wanted, she could marry this prince. That was true. Amazing truth. All she had to do was produce the other shoe. How odd that circumstances had given her power. She had no idea whether she would exercise that power. Father used to say that once you understood, truly understood, you would find what you were looking for. That is fate. He said that if there was evil in your heart, you would find demons. Xingxing's heart held no evil, so she was not afraid of demons. But at this moment, she understood only what she was not looking for. So her key lay open, waiting to understand what she was looking for. And then the prince came in. His clothing made so much padding around his body that she couldn't be sure, but she thought he was only mildly corpulent, less than her father. And he was shorter than father, too. He had a thin mustache, a small wispy beard on his chin, and a longer pointed slip of a beard on his neck. But he was clearly young, surprisingly young for one who had risen so high in the military. He wore a little red cap with an elephant on the front. Altogether, he seemed pleasant enough, but nothing special, hardly what one might expect of a prince. He ordered one of his soldiers to try the shoe on Wei Ping. Only the front half of her foot could get in, of course. He ordered the soldier to try the shoe on stepmother, but her heel couldn't make it in, no matter how hard she jammed it. The prince looked crestfallen. "That's it," he said. "You were the last two names on the list. I've tried every woman who went to the cave festival. The shoe fits none of them." Really? Her mother's shoes were that special? Those beautiful glowing shoes? Not even Xingxing had realized their uniqueness. But perhaps the prince had somehow understood that instinctively. Perhaps his hunt wasn't a sham after all. "Most honorable one," said Xingxing from the shadows.
"Who's there?" asked the prince. "It's no one," said stepmother hastily.
"No one with a voice," said the prince.
"Just my stepdaughter, a foolish girl, given to saying crazy things."
"Did she go to the cave festival?" asked the prince.
"Of course not," said stepmother.
"Most honorable one," said Xingxing, "do you believe her?"
"Shouldn't I?" asked the prince.
"If I were a prince," said Xingxing, knowing such words were dangerously daring, yet still getting to her feet and coming forward into the light, "I'd want an answer directly from my subject, not via a representative, especially not one chosen by the subject herself." She bowed and got on her knees before him.
"But look at you," he said. "You're far from a prince."
Justly spoken. She bowed till her nose touched the ground. Then she sat back on her heels again. What next? The air seemed to swirl around them, through them, faster and faster, almost dizzying her with its chaos, when in a minute dot of time, everything stopped. Everything became as clear and sharp as a sword point. Her choices boiled down to marrying this prince, or wandering far and wide, saying crazy things, becoming the person stepmother accused her of being. Without a plan and without logic, she leapt into the fire, the freedom and risk rendering her euphoric. And padded clothing can make one appear fatter and so wiser than he is.
The prince jerked his head. "I think you just insulted me."
"Or perhaps I teased you," said Xingxing. Her breath fluttered like tiny birds filling the cave, rushing toward their fate.
"Did you not just suggest that looks tell the worth of a person when you clearly don't believe it yourself?"
The girl is quite mad, I tell you, said stepmother. She raves, but my daughter here, she's a fine one.
I'm talking to the girl, the young woman, said the prince. Be quiet.
Xingxing found those words charming. They tapped softly on her heart. The prince pinched his upper lip between his thumb and index finger and thought. Xingxing found that gesture charming as well. She smiled. The prince looked surprised at her smile, then delighted. He smiled back.
You're certainly not subservient, whether you make a show of bowing or not.
And he laughed. All right, then. Did you go to the cave festival, impertinent one?
Being called impertinent was more charming than being called impertinent was more charming still.
Indeed I did, said Xingxing. Tap, tap, tap on her heart.
She couldn't have, said stepmother. She was sick.
I got well quickly, said Xingxing.
She doesn't have a green silk dress. The girl with gold shoes had a green silk dress, said stepmother.
And a feather cloak, said Wei Ping.
Well?
Well, said Xingxing to the prince.
Well, indeed, he said back, his thumb and index finger again pinching his upper lip.
She couldn't help but grin back.
He grinned back. Do you have a silk dress and a feather cloak, impertinent one?
And more, said Xingxing. Can you be patient?
She didn't wait for an answer. She crawled into the storeroom and dressed quickly in the dark. Then she crawled out and stood before the prince in the green silk dress with the feather cloak on her shoulders and the pearls around her neck. She held her hands behind her back.
How on earth? Stepmother gasped. She and Wei Ping clung to each other in their surprise.
The prince stared, silent. He appeared unable to move at first. Then he blinked, as though he were waking up.
I like your clothes, he said breathlessly.
And I like yours, said Xingxing, especially your funny hat.
I'm glad you like it, he said. It's cotton. I got it in India.
A man who traveled. Oh, her mind swirled with the air of the cave.
And now, impertinent one, he said with the slightest tremble in his voice, will you show me whether you are, instead, the truly pertinent one?
A man who liked puns. Xingxing's hand responded of its own accord, holding out one gold and sacred shoe.
If you give me that other shoe, I'll have a matching pair, she said.
Allow me that privilege, please.
The prince knelt on one knee and put both shoes on Xingxing.
You're the one, he said. You're my wife.
Is that an offer? Said Xingxing. We haven't even exchanged names.
The prince stood. My last name is Xu. My first name is Cheng Yang, but I'm called Su Song, Loyal Su.
I like it, breathed Xingxing.
I am Wu. My first name is Xingxing.
Xingxing, said the prince. Stars, that's perfect for our dynasty. Ming means bright, with a level tone. The word for dynasty sounds the same, but with another tone. He moved his arms through the air as he spoke, the sleeves of his jacket crossed before her eyes.
A star is destined to be the brightness of my life, you, dear Xingxing.
Words of purity, yet Xingxing couldn't yield herself quite yet. She couldn't fully trust herself to understand quite yet.
There are dragons on your sleeves, she said softly. My mother was a carp.
See, said stepmother, I told you she was mad. Her mother died when she was 7. She's always been a lunatic.
The prince pinched his upper lip. When he finally dropped his hand, his lip was white. He'd pinched so hard.
Your lip is as white as my mother's scales were.
Many of us never recognize our ancestors, said the prince at last. You're lucky. Maybe she has become a dragon.
What a delightful thought. There are important things about me that you need to know, said Xing Xing.
Let me hear them.
I don't want to be bought or sold, said Xing Xing.
Neither do I.
I can read and write, said Xing Xing.
So can I.
My feet are not bound.
I noticed, said the prince.
I have no dowry.
I need none, said the prince.
He stepped closer, and his face grew tender. Leave this cave now. Leave this woman and her daughter. Come, dearest Xing Xing, come with me. We have the rest of our lives for the rest of your list.
And so Xing Xing put out her hand with full understanding, and the prince took it. And the world kept moving, not toward any goal, just going, because that's what life does, as Kong Fu Zai says. And it's bound to be better with a companion who knows how to be tender, a companion you may grow to cherish.
Postscript. In the summer of 1997, I taught at Capital Normal University in Beijing, where my modern students wrote modern stories that impressed me with how much the very way they were told was steeped in tradition, and what a wealthy tradition. Whenever I wasn't in class, I was wandering, sometimes in museums, but sometimes just along the road, and sometimes in the countryside to the north, all the way to the Great Wall, looking and listening. When I came back to the United States after that summer, a family friend, Michael Chen, gave me a book on the three perfections. That was the start of an enormous reading list that stretched on for the next 6 years. Cinderella stories can be found in many cultures, among the earliest of which are the Chinese versions. While there are multiple and varying Chinese versions, the traditional tales are brief, consisting of a page or two of text, and I have been faithful to details of plot across these various versions. However, the tale here differs from the traditional Chinese tales I have read in three ways. I have chosen to place it in Ming times, rather in Qin and Han times, in a northern province, rather than in a southern province, and in an ordinary community, rather than in a minority community. These changes allowed me to integrate cultural habits of time, place, and community, notably the prominence of foot binding and the social revolutions of the first Ming emperor, who certainly was not an entirely positive figure, though his cruelty does not play a role in this book. That brought the story in a direction that compelled me personally. I offer it with respect and gratitude. About the author. Donna Jo Napoli is the acclaimed and award-winning author of many novels, both fantasies and contemporary stories. She won the Golden Kite Award for Stones in Water in 1997. Her novel Zell was named an American Bookseller Association Pick of the List, a Publisher's Weekly Best Book, a BCCB Blue Ribbon, and a School Library Journal Best Book, and a number of her other novels have been selected as ALA Best Books. She is the head of the linguistics department at Swarthmore College in Pennsylvania, where she lives with her husband and their children.